Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
A fair amount of media attention has been given to the results of a study called Cane Gene. Cane Gene is a collaboration of Cornell University, UCLA, and the National Institute of Health to map the canine genome. When the project was begun, it was assumed that the canine genome would have a tremendous amount of diversity because there were so many breeds. When you think about a Chihuahua versus a St. Bernard or a Mastiff versus a Pekingese, you can understand why they might think that. But it turns out that the canine genome is relatively simple, and in fact surprisingly so. Single genes or a handful of genes may accomplish dramatic results, and results that sometimes require many, many more genes to achieve the same thing in humans. So because of this, scientists are now looking at the canine genome very carefully to see if it can help them zero in on specific genes or at least kinds of genes to help narrow down the genes, mutations of which may be associated with similar diseases in people. The idea that dog breeders may have inadvertently have created the ultimate lab rat relative to understanding diseases in humans is kind of disconcerting, isn't it? I mean, we've always tended to hold the dog sort of above that. And yet, it does make sense. On the other hand, this doesn't come without a price for the dogs. If we look at this from the side of human behavior, we can understand how this extraordinary result came about. The fewer genes involved in a particular trait, say long hair or floppy ears, the easier it is to reproduce that particular trait in successive generations. So for humans, such a limited gene pool was most energy efficient. While nothing I read commented on this, I suspect that this particular evolution of the genome probably got a decent jump when breeding for show came into vogue. The reason I say that is because when dogs are bred for function, if they're not healthy, if they're not physically fit, they're not going to be given special care and attention so that they can be bred again. On the other hand, if an animal is being bred for a particular physical trait, then it's worth it to the breeder to do whatever has to be done to enable that animal to survive long enough to reproduce. So the net result for dogs is that we have a fair number of diseases in dogs that may involve mutations of relatively few genes. Researchers who identify those genes can then look for comparable genes in humans. And although mutations of those specific genes in humans might not supply the whole answer, at least this will enable the researchers to narrow their search. Notice how I stumble when I talk about mutations and causing and association. Because we all know that genes don't cause anything any more than mutations of genes cause anything. They're associated with it. They're related to it somehow, but we don't know how. And so we wind up with the dog as our most valuable research animal, a glimpse into the workings of our own bodies and our own diseases. Because via selective breeding we've made it simpler for them to get these diseases, we've made it easier to study the more complex forms of those diseases in ourselves. That's a tough one to swallow, isn't it? There's no doubt that it's good news for humans and those who study diseases in humans. One of the geneticists involved in the project referred to how dog breeders have done their field work for them. I think field work is a misnomer for this. I think what the geneticist really should have said is that the dog breeders have done their experimenting for them, their creation of a genetically manipulated research population. Field work to me means you're out in the field, you're out in the real world. You're watching the way animals and humans interact in their natural environment. Genetic manipulation of one species by another isn't exactly what I would consider field work. I'm not saying that it doesn't have its value, but I do think that we need to keep this in perspective. Because while this is all very good news for those humans and dogs who may be afflicted by these diseases now or sometime in the future, the bad news is for the dogs whose human-manipulated genome, with its lack of diversity, could make them more valuable as research animals than as companions.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.